Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com, and with me as always is my faithful co-host Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, Charlie. I hear you're 10 under the weather. Hope you can make it through okay.
I think I'll make it, but I think it helps my radio voice.
I'm going to be up for... it's going to be an interesting one, then. It's a new challenge for me.
I remember we were fighting last episode. We're going to get to that fight. I'm not as hot under the collar as I was last week, but we're going to get to it.
That's right. That's right. I remember now.
But first, we're going to start with the widest releases this week, and the one that's caused the most vitriol on the internet, Ghostbusters, the reboot of Ghostbusters with four leading ladies instead of four leading men, a very, very close remake of the 1984 original. In fact, it's really hard to pick out anything different other than gender. You know, you still got the fighting with the city hall, people who don't believe they can catch ghosts, they're learning how to become Ghostbusters themselves. There's a really big climax at the end with what looks like a knockoff Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. There's a lot the same here, Hannah.
There is, and I do think it's an okay reboot. I wish they had figured out a way to somehow incorporate the old and the new, sort of the way that Creed did with Rocky. You know, you just want something more than those brief cameos with the folks from, you know, 1984.
But we're not going to tell you who.
We won't tell you who, but I'll tell you one of the four. Well, one's dead.
That's not a spoiler.
So Harold Ramis is not dead in this.
And actually, but remember that thing?
That's true. Okay. But he did not. He was not able to show up for filming. And there is one other character that did not show up. And I read that he did not show up because he did not think it made sense to go and shoot for one day for this cameo because he didn't want to recreate.
I think I know who you're talking
about.
Yeah,
so it's the only one that you don't remember seeing in this movie. But the four women are funny. They are very good. I don't think that the haters on the internet necessarily are being fair because I think they do as good a job as you could possibly do with the material. They're better than the material that they have to work with. So I think that the added estrogen probably saved this movie to some degree, and they do have the addition of Chris Hemsworth, who we all know as Thor, as a little gratuitous eye candy, which actually worked for me in this movie.
Well, Ghostbusters has already made history. It is the most downvoted movie trailer in YouTube history. It's close to 1 million downvotes.
Yeah, but did somebody vote like 999,000 times?
Well, I don't watch previews, so I went to watch this this morning after I saw it, and it's bad. They didn't do a good job. The trailer is bad. It looks like it's set up to be a very bad movie. It picks the silliest parts. I could see why it got downvoted, but on the other hand, I think this movie is bad. You just said their ladies are funny. I disagree. The ladies aren't funny at all. And it's the fault of co-writer and director Paul Feig. He wrote a miserable script. It's not funny.
It's not a good script. And it's not a good story.
No.
Like, the story doesn't really make all that much sense. You've got these women who suddenly come together and at the same time that there happens to be this influx of apparitions appearing all across Manhattan in the subway and in a museum and in a hotel. And there's never really a very solid explanation for where they suddenly came from, how they happen to be there. The ghosts are also different. It's kind of a hot mess where the story is concerned. But the four women, and with Chris Hemsworth, there's an entertainment factor to it that they are, I think, watchable, and I think they're you know, that they do the best that they can with this. And I think there were a lot of people laughing. So you might not have been laughing, but there were quite a few people around me who actually, whether it was the nostalgia factor or these women themselves, came out of that movie having enjoyed themselves. So I wouldn't completely pan it. I do think the women are better than the story that they were given. And I'll tell you, even though this is, you know, Melissa McCarthy is your headliner for these women, it is, and Kristen Wiig is also the one that everyone knows from Saturday Night Live. And then Leslie Jones from Saturday Night Live has a very, her role is kind of diminished, I would say. But then Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live, I think, is the scene stealer in this movie. I think her stuff and her role is the most entertaining, and she's just the most fun to watch.
75% of the leading ladies are Saturday Night Live alums and current. There's also other stars who pop up. Cecily Strong.
Right.
Another SNL person. I agree, Kate McKinnon was the strongest. It's probably because she got to be the funniest. Kristen Wiig had to play the straight edge, mm-hmm. so she just had to react a lot. And Melissa McCarthy dialed it down a little bit from normal Melissa McCarthy. Usually
That's
she's
true.
Way over there in the extreme. She dialed it back a little bit, but yeah. she still does her standard. It's the same character she plays every film, just a little bit dialed down.
Yeah.
I like what they... I want to go back to Chris Hemsworth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Like, he's... Annie Potts, you remember her? Yeah, they have to have a receptionist who's not quite right. I get it. But he... is beyond human stupid. He doesn't understand phones. He stares at the fish tank. Pardon me.
You okay there, Charlie?
Well, it's because I'm baffled by Chris Hemsworth.
That's right. Let me explain it to you while you, you should probably get yourself some water.
Well, I want
to... But I'll tell you, Chris Hemsworth, his character, the idea is that this is a gender-bending twist to this movie. And so he is absolutely... trying to be the dumb secretary that is normally played by a woman. And so in this case, with all male leads, so it's kind of turning that whole notion on its head and saying, here we have a doofus guy surrounded by these smart women, and they hire him because they can ogle him as eye candy. So it's more, this is to me... it's not like your classic comedy. It is more of a parody. It feels more like a parody. So I think if you go into it looking at it that way, as a parody more so, then you might actually get a little more out of it.
I appreciate the reverse sexism. It works.
It is.
But the movie just doesn't work. It's not good. The villain's ridiculous.
Yeah, the villain, I couldn't even quite figure out who the villain was, frankly. It was... a very poorly developed villain. But again, people, if you think about the number of people who came out of the theater who enjoyed it, you can't dismiss that, because there are a lot of people who are absolutely looking forward to this. I think the backlash before the movie even came out, there's something to be said. I think critics are almost going to be kinder to it now, because there was such a setup for it being bad. And I think that was just not fair. I think you have to wait. You can't base it on the trailer. God knows we saw enough trailers before this movie last night.
That was so bad.
That was ridiculous. They showed like 20 minutes of trailers. And so by the time the trailers were done, I just wanted that movie to just get freaking started already.
You know, that reminds me. I did laugh last night. The first 5 minutes of the film are the best 5 minutes. The tour guide, played by Zach Woods.
Oh, yeah.
He has the first encounter with a ghost. And it's funny. It's so funny. I was in a good mood. This is going to be a good movie. And then it went to crap after that.
Yeah, I mean, it did set up with a much stronger premise. And then the story that they seemed to be setting up with that initial scene really was not the story that played out in the end. So I agree that structurally... the movie has some fundamental flaws. From a narrative perspective, it has some fundamental flaws. The big thing is, I don't think it would have mattered whether it was men or women or anybody. With this material, it is as good as I think it could be with the script and the story that they had. And someday, and I think if it does well enough, we will see this as a franchise. And if, I know you, that's killing you, isn't it?
Oh, no.
But if we do see it as a franchise again, I hope they find some way to really make sure that they craft a much stronger story and maybe find a better way to integrate the old with the new.
It'd be hard to make it worse, really. I just had a miserable time in the theater.
Sorry, I wasn't miserable, but...
Well, now for something completely different. Tell us about Bryan Cranston, probably one of the world's greatest actors right now, in The Infiltrator.
Well, so The Infiltrator, to me, is more like an episode. Anybody who watched Miami Vice in the 80s, this movie is very similar. It feels like a very special episode of Miami Vice where Crockett and Tubbs go deep undercover to bust the biggest, baddest drug kingpin of all time. Well, this movie is actually based on a true story, and it's a biography of this federal agent, Robert Mazur, who went undercover and helped bring down Pablo Escobar and the money laundering operation that kept him and his cronies afloat in the 1980s. And so it was a really big deal. And Bryan Cranston is Bryan Cranston. He is very good, but it's very hard to separate his character in this movie from knowing his whole character as Walter White in Breaking Bad. So I think it's going to be hard for people to totally separate that. But this is an interesting drama that just takes you into this deep undercover operation, and it's very 80s, and you know, you got your people with pagers, and which is kind of fun to see. And it maintains a certain level of tension throughout that I think is good. But I don't really know if anybody's in the mood in the summer to see a based on true story movie about the war on drugs in the 1980s. It's just not much fun.
Now, it seems, I've never seen the movie before until now, but it seems like I've seen this movie before.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of it is true. It is adapted from Robert Mazur's book from 2009. And the director, Brad Furman, he did The Lincoln Lawyer, if you remember that one. His mom adapted the book, and they say she got the job herself, like totally not related to him being the director. So
way
she
to go, Mom!
And it is a very large cast. I had a lot of work to do. It was like, okay, is that the banker guy? Is that the informant guy? So there's so many people that just filter in and off screen, and a lot of them don't get their due. Like, they're a major character. John Leguizamo is a major character. He is Bryan Cranston's partner, his buddy, and he does not get his due. You don't know anything about this guy. Bryan Cranston's wife, played by Juliette Aubrey, all she gets to do is cry a lot and say, promise me this is the last one.
Worry about him and whether he's maybe cheating on her with his fake wife.
Now, the fake fiancé, her first undercover gig, she gets her due. She was all right. She's played by Diane Kruger. And she holds her own because she has to. Because a lot of times she is facing off against Benjamin Bratt. Now, Benjamin Bratt is the big villain. There's a lot of villains. But he's the big villain. And actually, he reminded me of his character from Ride Along 2.
I was about to say, he is Benjamin Bratt whenever Benjamin Bratt is a bad guy.
I didn't know he was in the movie.
That is exactly what
you
see.
And when he popped up as the bad, he's Pablo Escobar's guy in Miami, when he showed up, it's like, of course it's Benjamin Bratt. Who else would it be?
Yeah. Yeah, and it is. It's a very familiar, it does. It all feels very familiar. And so that while there's nothing inherently wrong with the movie, there just isn't much to drive people to it. Unless you really, really love the darkest episodes of Miami Vice. Oh, but isn't there a St. Pete twist to this story?
So it takes place in 1985, and it's very authentic. Mm-hmm. And they're hanging in towards the beginning. Olympia Dukakis shows up. I apologize, Ms. Dukakis. I thought you were dead. I didn't know you were still around.
Ouch.
So they're at a hotel, and it says The Dolphin. And I'm looking in the background. I've been to St. Pete a number of times, and it looks like, okay, you're actually in St. Pete. They didn't, do a fool you, do this on the back lot in Hollywood. So I asked someone who lives in St. Pete, is there a dolphin? He's like, yes, there is a dolphin. And back then, I think it was even called, like, the Happy Dolphin. So, yeah, that's actually St. Pete there, folks. If you're listening at RadioSt.Pete.com and you want to see your town in a movie, The Infiltrator has you covered.
That's right. You are the center of a lot of drug money laundering for drug money and drug running. But hey, other than that...
But you can play the game. Like, if you go see the movie with a friend, you're like, I know where that is. That's over there. That geography is impossible. They can't get from that side of town to that side of town.
And that's fun, because I know that when I see certain movies that refer to places where I've lived or that I've visited, I like trying to figure out what seems authentic and what's not. So, you know, it's, it's hard to just...
I know, I see where you're coming from.
Anyone.
I don't love this movie.
Who do you recommend it to? I mean, it really just has to be somebody who's got a thing for... Who's interested in undercover operations and the war on drugs and who nostalgic for the 80s. But I actually thought, you know, if I'm going that, the Nice Guys was actually...
Yeah, that's a great transition. Maybe fans of The Wire.
Yeah.
The Nice Guys. This is production design over story. It looks so much better than its actual plot. Everything, you know, the soundtrack is right, the clothes, the cars, it's very Nice Guys. Think Catch Me If You Can or The Sting. Those are the biggest in this genre. It's what happens when you do kind of a true story in an earlier era. They focus so much on what it looked like, kind of forgot the story a little bit there, Mr. Furman.
Well, and there's really, it's very difficult to figure out what Bob's true motivation is for continuing this undercover work. It's like he's had an opportunity to get out from under it. He's got a wife and kids at home. He's a good dad, a good family man, a good husband by all accounts. And so what the movie is attempting to do is interweave, you know, this dichotomy of this guy's home life and this undercover life that he lives. And the lines that blur for him and for his family. And I kind of felt that it just never quite really satisfied why he would do this and why he would continue to put his family through that.
He went pretty far and exposed his family to a lot of things.
Yes.
I don't think this movie's going to do very well. People might go for Bryan Cranston. It's a minor Cranston. He's very good, but it's forgettable. It's not that amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, next up is a film I got the pleasure of seeing. Hannah went to see something else that night. We are about to dive into that if I can still have a voice by then.
That's right. Oh, sorry. Are you losing your voice?
Yeah, no kidding. Captain Fantastic. Captain Fantastic is one of the best films of the year so far. I gave it 4 stars, a very rare thing for me. It's directed by a man named Matt Ross. It's his second feature. Matt Ross is also an actor. You may know him from American Horror Story or Silicon Valley. And it stars Viggo Mortensen. He is a dad of 6 kids, 3 boys, 3 girls, from like 7 to 17. And they live off the grid, Washington State, far northwest. And they train in survival skills. They are in top physical condition. They climb mountains, and they're like philosopher kings. They study politics and history. Even the 7-year-old gives a perfect definition of fascism. They don't celebrate Christmas. They celebrate Noam Chomsky Day, a true American thought leader.
Do you get gifts for that?
So they have to. They do.
Okay.
They do, and it's not the gifts you would think you would normally give.
Maybe a book.
So they have to leave. Something happens, and they have to go on a trip, and they get on their school bus, and this school bus is now like, do you remember the little like the Volkswagen minivan in Little Miss Sunshine? It's like that identifiable, and then it's a culture clash. The kids can't relate to their peers because they don't talk to other kids, and they're actually way above other kids. And this is when I noticed how much I was enjoying the movie. Identified with him. I have felt empathy for them, and I have nothing in common with him. I don't live off the grid. I couldn't. He goes to visit his sister, suburban housewife, 2 ignorant children in high school who can't tell you the first thing about anything. And she says, what are you doing to your children? These children need stability. They need structure. Put them in school. And I was saying, no, don't ruin the children with public school. I'm defending this guy that I have nothing in common with. I would have a conversation with him in real life, and we couldn't conversate. I would identify with the suburban mom. And that is how strong this film is. You feel for these characters and you're like, no, you know what? These guys are doing it right. And everyone else is doing it wrong. It's fascinating. Such a strong script.
Yeah, I would suspect that I would probably want there to be some middle ground, or I'd be searching for some middle ground. Whereas you know, I'd strongly identify with keeping these kids as the little philosopher kings and you know, that side of them, making sure that's cultivated. I suspect, based on the trailer, and I was a huge fan of, like, Swiss Family Robinson, and this looks like a Swiss Family Robinson to the extreme, but with, you know, with a much more abstract and highbrow kind of treatment. But I do like that the notion of occasionally like turning off the electronics and getting back to nature and having kids, you know, read as opposed to maybe chasing a Pokemon for across the park. But I definitely want to see it, but I'm not so sure that I will be as enthusiastic as you. And I do feel bad that it will take me a while to see this movie and that I did see a different movie instead of this one on the night in question.
Well, he's trying to figure out how to be, you know, a parent. And it's, a lot of this is about parenting. This is just one example of how to do it. And it's an extreme example. And by the end, yeah, it comes, that middle ground you're talking about shows up.
Mm-hmm.
His father-in-law threatens to take the kids away. It turns into kind of that saga. But it doesn't get too, you know, melodramatic there. So we knew this movie was probably going to be good. It won the best film at the Seattle International Film Festival. There's like 150 big films that go there. And this was number one. Number two, by the way, was Hunt for the Wilder People. And you loved that movie.
I loved that movie. Yep.
So instead of going to a movie that you knew was going to be good and that people said was better than The Hunt for the Wilder People, which it is, you chose to see a movie I can't even name because it's coming out next week.
We can
and
still name it.
And you know it was going to be garbage. You knew it was going to be garbage. And you only went, I think, because of the running time.
No, I went because, well, the 81-minute running time was part of it. But I also went because I was meeting somebody for happy hour. And, you know, every once in a while you have to do something other than just focus on going to the movie.
I don't understand.
I know. So I did choose that movie based on location, running time, and other plans that I had for the evening. But I would venture to bet you a bottle of wine that that movie does better than Captain Fantastic.
Of course it will, because the people going to see these films identify with the suburban mom and not the people living in the woods. But come year end, the movie that you saw, zero awards,
absolutely,
unless it's a Razzie.
No,
and this one might get nominated for a slew.
I have no illusions that the movie that I saw instead will absolutely be forgotten the instant it comes out in theaters. However,
I can't wait until you try to review it next week because you don't remember it already.
I don't remember it. It's been way too long. But I do think that Captain Fantastic, I suspect I will like it on some level. Whether it beats for me, Hunt for the Wilder People will be interesting. I'll tell you one thing I've noticed, and this will lead us into our final film too, a lot of movies with really good kids. It's going to be a very difficult category at award season for that best youth performance because I've already seen a ton of them this year, and Hunt for the Wilder People being one of them. And I see these movies where these kids are actually very strong. And so that's, I think that bodes well for the future if they can actually sustain their talent and stay grounded. But also I just think that you know, the people who like those types of movies that that feature really smart and talented kids and funny kids will get a lot out of some of these movies.
Well, that is an excellent transition because our next film, its two main stars, its protagonists are, I guess you'd call them middle schoolers.
Early high school years?
Early then. They're like 14, 13, 14.
Could be.
It's naturally French, but it's called Microbe and Gasoline. In French, I guess it's Microbe et Gasoil.
Yes, very good.
And it's directed by one of the most well-known French directors in America, Michel Gondry. He did Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind. He won an Oscar for that, for Best Original Screenplay. He's done Be Kind Rewind, if you remember that, with Jack Black and Mos Def.
Wow, okay.
He did The Science of Sleep. That's when he got into his recent kind of surrealist stage. He did The Green Hornet, if you remember that.
Did he really?
And he's done a 100 music videos, like all the White Stripes and a bunch of Foo Fighters stuff. So he's a really interesting guy. So here he gets a little autobiographical. It's set in Versailles. He's from Versailles. And I think he gets a little, he's thinking back to his childhood, a little reminiscent. And it's a coming-of-age story. It's an adventure story. Summer, school's out, summertime. We're mad at our parents, we're mad at our friends, let's take off, let's do something crazy. What do they do, Hannah?
Well, these two kids are outcasts, and they're drawn to each other by the sheer fact that they are both pretty much shunned by their peers at school. And one is sort of this artistic, quiet type, and then the other one is more pushes the boundaries a lot more, and outgoing in a weird sort of push people kind of way, and also has mechanical skills. So one has artistic skills, one has mechanical skills, and these two kids decide to first they want to build a car to take themselves on an adventure and go driving around France. And then when that doesn't quite develop the way they anticipated, they end up building essentially a house car, a little car on wheels.
That's a good way to put it. House
car.
Yeah,
it's a little house car.
Looks like a garden shed.
It does. So it looks like a little shed on wheels. So if anybody, you know, thinks it's kind of cool to just take an Airstream around the country, you know, just imagine these two kids building this little shack and putting on wheels and just driving around and sort of living out of that for a while. But so that starts this adventure. They kind of just leave home and set out on this adventure. And it becomes this story about how these two boys really push each other to be better and to, they inspire each other in a very quirky sort of way. And it's a good movie, but it's just, again, it's not anything. Like I saw Sing Street recently, and so if you're looking for just that kind of nice coming of age movie that's an indie, that vibe, Sing Street was done better. And it's in English. And so there is a tough part of this movie to get through, which is if you're at all tired or you tend to look away from the screen, you're missing subtitles. And so unless you know French or you absolutely love foreign films with subtitles and have no problem getting through that, this can be a tough movie. So I don't think it's going to cross really much beyond the art house crowd at all.
No, I don't think it's very identifiable Mm-mm. to American audiences. There's not a lot of 13-year-olds in, I don't know, name your state, building garden shed cars, which it looks like the top speed might be 15 miles per hour, yeah. And that's being generous. But yeah, it's not bad. I enjoyed it. It's light. Their adventures are not that wacky. They run into a dentist, they run into a prostitute or a Korean street gang, and
there's a little love story. There's a love interest with one of the boys, and so it's got a lot of people will know the French actress Audrey Tautou.
Look at you.
Who plays the mom to one of the boys.
And she, so she's she was funny. In, she's very progressive.
Yeah, so she was like in Amelie
she
in Da Vinci
was
Code.
Amelie.
So,
and she makes her son Daniel, he's the arty kid you were talking about,
yeah.
Very uncomfortable. She likes to talk about his sexuality. And what 13-year-old boy does not want to talk about his sexuality with his mother?
Yes, his mother is very progressive and wants him to talk things through and... But she's at least, she is a French actress that is recognizable to the American audience. And so, you know, her role isn't huge, but it's solid. And the reason that it's Microbe and Gasoline is that these are the nicknames that that the bullies at school have given to these two boys, and it just sticks. And so that's how they come to be known. Microbe, because he's this little arty dude.
He's tiny. He's real
very
tiny.
Small. Yeah. Very small stature. And Gasoline, because he's always working on cars and things and reeks of gasoline.
And he's always got that dirt under his nails.
Yes. So that's where that whole title comes from. I'm not sure the title will really help this movie.
No, it doesn't.
I don't think it's going to help anyone like seek it out or find it. But if you liked, I would say if you like Sing Street and that kind of movie and you like foreign films, then this is one that you might be interested in seeing.
That's a good one. Yeah, I couldn't say it better. That was great. That was good. So to wrap it up, we split on Ghostbusters.
Yeah, we
did. You were the standard. It's nice. It's fine.
No, you're the standard. Everything is 2.5 stars except for, like, Captain Fantastic.
No, except for Ghostbusters, which is, like, 1.5 being generous.
Is that what you gave it?
Actually, I gave it 1 and I bumped it up 1/2.
Ah, see. Because so,
I remember the ghosts, like, look okay to me.
Yeah, see, so you give things... I don't rate movies. So for me, nice and okay and fine is what you would consider like a 2-star, 2.5-star movie.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And so I think I'm giving things a nice and fine and not so bad just as often as you're giving them 2.5 stars. That's my defense.
Speaking of nice, fine, 2.5 stars is The Infiltrator. You know,
yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine if you
it's
like
a lot
Brian.
Better than the Ghostbusters.
It's so different. I can't even imagine. Ghostbusters is going to get so many more people, and Ghostbusters is better for the summer. Infiltrator is just not a good summer flick.
I don't need seasons to define my movies.
I do. I want popcorn fun. Bring it on. You know, dark and depressing. It's like leave those for September, October, November, December.
Only one of us saw Captain Fantastic, and it is fantastic. It's one or two of the year. It's that good. Viggo Mortensen is great to watch. Great story. It's not in every theater. Seek this out. You will really enjoy yourself.
I'll take your word for it, and I will watch it before we do our top 10 movies of 2016.
Thank you.
That's my goal.
Maybe I'll watch that movie you saw instead.
I can't say it.
I
can say the name. I'm not reviewing it yet. It's just called Lights Out. And that's all I'll say. But so next week, Lights Out.
And, I don't know, maybe coming in second place this week for me is Microbe and Gasoline. Hannah said it best. If you like foreign films or Sing Street, this might be up your alley.
Yeah, it'll do.
It'll do. All right, well, my apologies for my health breakdown on this podcast.
If I'm sick next week, we'll know who to blame.
Absolutely. So, on behalf of myself, Charlie Jewell, and my co-host, Hannah Bookdahl, thank you very much.
Have a good weekend.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Bookdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.